folks, this is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison, and every Thursday we release these special episodes where we look back at the content from our earlier years of the podcast. This week, it's the Best of Love Stories, number 2. In a little bit, we're going to hear from Mark Schlahetka, who shared his story at a storytelling workshop I taught in Charleston, South Carolina in 2013. But first, a story from Stephanie Garibaldi, who told this at a Risk Live show in Washington, D.C. in 2013. Stephanie now runs her own storytelling organization with monthly shows called Story Extreme, that you can find at storyextreme.org or check out their YouTube channel at Story Extreme. Here's Stephanie Garibaldi now with a story we call Virgin Sacrifice.
I'm wondering what I'm going to do with my life. As I walk, I yo-yo, I wonder some more. I'm 22, careerless, and I've just journeyed to the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico to see the pyramids of Chichen Itza, you know, the ones the Mayans built thousands of years ago and are still standing. And I'm walking through this outdoor marketplace next door, just trying to figure out what my personal pyramids could be. And I'm yo-yoing, you know, to help me think better. And suddenly there's a tap on my shoulder, and I turn to see this young man, one of the market vendors I just passed, and he asks, "¿Qué es eso?" pointing to the yo-yo. I said, "Oh, a yo-yo," and I put the loop over his finger and then stand back in awe as he whips it around the world. He walks the dog, even rocks the cradle. I'm laughing. I start to walk away and say, "You keep it. You're better at that than I am." And he says, "Wait, I am Itacho, and before I can accept your kind gift, you must agree to come to my home for dinner." I think, that sounds fair. So, I wait while he locks up his silver shop, and then I walk the 3 miles with him to his Mayan village. And I don't want to offend my champion of free dinner, but I do admit, I didn't think there were still Mayan villages in existence. And he says, "Oh, sure, we're small but self-sufficient. We keep to the old customs," speaking mostly in Maya. I say, "I see," though I don't. And keeping to the old custom sounds ominous to me. I want to ask, "Are you still sacrificing virgins?" Not that I have anything to worry about on the virgin front after 3 years of college. But it freaks me out a little. And he's just going on about his village as we're walking, telling me about all the villagers by their careers. You know, there's the butcher, the teacher, all the different kinds of farmers, and the village vet who doubles as the village doctor. Yikes. I'm wondering how he's going to introduce me since I'm jobless, but it's not a problem. He just says, "Mama, I have brought a wonderful guest for dinner." And she envelops me in one of those super big mama bear hugs. And as I'm trying to breathe, she says, "I'll set the table for 6. And we have the most delicious dinner, wonderful conversation with Itacho's parents, his 2 sisters. And as it's coming to a close, Itacho cops his plea with his parents, "Mom and Dad, can we keep her?" And they agree. And I find myself with my very own hammock. And it is the first night in that hammock as I sleep that their farm sow is giving birth to 14 healthy piglets, the largest litter ever, and all 18 of the hen's eggs hatch within an hour of the piglets being born. And word spreads fast in this small village, and by the next morning, there's a villager at the door who'd like me to lay my hands on his goat's belly. Why? The older sister, Martania, explains that it's just a Mayan custom for good luck, so I do it, but I'm still confused, and when the door closed, I asked her, "So this is a normal Mayan thing?" And she said, "Oh, don't worry about that. Come here, my sister and I want to learn more about you." And they start in with the questions. "So is it true that you traveled here alone, without an escort?" And the other one says, "And you are not married?" And I say, yes, I came alone and I'm unmarried and I'm only 22. And they're like, 22 and not married. And then they say, well, at least you still might have a chance with our brother, because he seems to like you, the first girl he's ever brought home. And I say, oh no, that was just a yo-yo swap thing. That's nothing romantic. And they say, well, because you walked with him alone and unescorted, you are officially courting. And I'm shocked to learn this, and they go on to explain that normally he would have already presented his intentions to my parents, but since my parents aren't here, it's forgiven. And by the way, don't worry, because he's not concerned about the fact that you're beyond the marrying age. What is the marrying age? And they say Mayan women marry between 14 and 16. Our mother married at 14 because she was dying to get out of the house. And apparently, if you're unmarried, you're not supposed to walk unescorted, because the theory is that such a temptation would make men just jump out of the bushes and rape and attack you. And they say, is it the same in your country? No, not even a little. And after I tell them all about my wonderful country, they demand, so you have your own car, you go wherever you want, you live alone? Why would you ever want to get married? And feeling a little foolish, I say, well, you know, love? And they just look at me like I'm the saddest person on the earth. But then they say, well, maybe you will love our brother. And I say, well, I don't know, I have to get to know him. And later that day, I'm secretly watching him out the back kitchen window. And Itacho is there in like a Disney scene. All the animals are around him, like the sheep, the pigs, the chickens, the dogs. Even this old milking cow appears to be nuzzling the back of his neck. And I hear, right behind me, he has quite a way with the animals, no? It's his mother. Yes, I say, and she says, he is the first in three generations in our village to be an animal whisperer. And she explains that the animals all go to him. They send something in him that we do not. And I'm intrigued. I want to know what the animal sense, and am I not an animal too? And then I feel it. I have to fight the urge to go to him right then, and I just watch, and I see how his hands stroke the animals so softly, and I start to wonder what those hands would feel like on me. And meanwhile, over the next week, the villagers are still coming every morning with different animals asking me to lay my hands on their bellies. I still don't know what's going on until the seventh morning, when one of them in Spanish allows as how he believes me to be a Mayan fertility goddess. Clearly it's a mistake, but I can't talk him out of it, or any of the villagers out of it, so I kind of go along. It seems like only fair, because they're letting me stay in their house for free. So I continue these Mayan fertility goddess services on a lark. And I fill in the rest of my day working in the silver shop alongside Itacho. And so we're spending tons of time together, right? But never once does he give me any indicator of romance. And we talk about everything except for us, or if there is an us, you know. And one day he says, as we're heading out to the silver shop, maybe you should bring a bathing suit just in case. I bring it, not asking any more questions. And when we come home from the silver shop, we stop by the only hotel in the village, which is run by his friend Chango. Chango meets us at the front and says, the guests are all at dinner. You have the pool for 1 hour to yourselves. Enjoy, amigo. So, I mean, this pool is beautiful, lit up by all the setting sun colors, and we dive in, and we're turning flips, and we chase each other, and as we're swimming alongside each other along the bottom of the pool, I'm thinking, we're just friends, that's okay. And when I come up for air, he's already there, one hand on the back wall, he reaches his other hand out to me, pulls me in close, and all of a sudden, there I am, chest to chest, face to face against the pool wall, and he says, you act as if you don't know it, but you carry with you a piece of my heart, my brain, my very soul, wherever you go. And I'm about to say, what? Because it's so out of nowhere when he kisses me, and it's as if a current is going through me, and I start to have this irrational thought that we can electrocute ourselves with this current in the water. But I don't care, it's so good. And then he stops, and he says, I'm sorry, we have to go now. Amor de mi vida, love of my life. And I follow him out of the pool, still in a daze, and we walk home, he holds my hand. And at dinner that night, his mother turns to me and says, will your family come to the wedding? And I say, what wedding? And she says, well, yours and Itacho's, of course. Oh my God, she knows. She knows what happened in that pool. She's got spies everywhere. I try to stay calm. I say, we haven't really talked about that distant possibility yet. She says nothing more. And things go on like normal, with me working as a fertility goddess by morning, silver shop by day. And the only two things that are different is that when he walks with me, he holds my hand, and he finds these little stolen moments every now and then to pull me to him and kiss me and then let me go. That in close kiss is his only move, apparently. But it's enough, because it's so thrilling and dangerous. And then, once I've been there a little over 6 months, I get a note from him. Secret note, like he'd pass in high school. And it says, meet me on the rooftop tonight at midnight. Yeah, right? So I go, and I mean, midnight cannot come soon enough. I get up there, he's already there. He again pulls me in his embrace. He says, thank you, I couldn't wait any longer. But then he does the same kiss as always and lets me go, and I'm thinking, huh. Okay, I guess this is it, and it's not gonna go any further. Maybe that's for the best. But then he starts to kiss me on the back of my neck. And as I melt and close my eyes, I don't see that he's unbuttoning the front of my shirt until my shirt is on the floor. And as I'm looking down like it's just leapt from my shoulders trying to figure this out, I feel his hand on the back of my bra. And that's gone the way of the shirt too. And suddenly, I'm half naked. And so then, just in fairness, I pull off his t-shirt. And then he lays me down on these blankets he's put up on the roof. And we lay side by side and he says, I wanna see where you keep my heart. A little cheesy, but it worked. His fingers down my throat and my chest, and his lips are following, and he's kissing me everywhere. And I am having an out-of-body experience, people! Logic has left my body and is standing over me, making these snarky comments like, well, he really knows his way around a girl's body for a Mayan virgin. But I don't care. The animal part of me is left behind, and I'm all his. And I am moaning and trying to get Logic to shut up. And then before I know it, our pants are gone. And the next thing, and I don't know how I did it or when it happened, and I don't care. I am giving myself to this Mayan fiance in a very un-Mayan way. And it is good. And then he rolls over onto his back and he pulls me atop of him and lowers me down on him. And when I say him, I mean his penis. And it is good and right and everything. And I try to block out Logic altogether, who's saying something about not having a condom on. And I just let myself concentrate fully on that circular motion and the build. And then zowie, we erupt like both together, just like I've read about romance novels, but never experienced. And then I'm lying in strong arms, thinking, yeah, I know why the animals come to you. And the stars are beautiful because they're unhampered by street lamps. But then, it's as if the sky is closing in, like the eyes of the villagers are on me, and I feel this contempt. And suddenly, it's coming over me, and I just say, I have to go to the bathroom. And I get up, and I run down two flights of stairs to the bathroom. I lock the door, and I slide down against it, and I start crying. And I am not a crier, okay? And I am weeping full out. And I don't know why. I mean, I've had sex before. Maybe not that good, but I've had it. and I don't understand why this sadness is coming over me. And then I understand, then I get it. It's like because I've been living with Mayans for 6 months. He's been there his whole life, and this is not their way. And I have been disrespected, and I feel terrible. And then I hear him pounding on the door, and he's saying, Stephanie, I can hear you crying. Let me in. Let me help you. But I just cry more, and he's getting more desperate. I'll bang the door down. Open the door, please. Let me help you. So finally, I don't want him banging down the door, so I unlock it. And he comes in. He takes one look at my tear-stained face, and he says, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't know. I thought because you were American that you weren't a virgin. I'm so sorry I took it from you. And he hugs me as tenderly as anyone ever hugged anybody, and he lets me go, and he looks in my eyes, and he says, can you forgive me? And I nod, just in the spirit of the thing, without thinking that I'm sort of now confirming this wrong impression that he's stolen my virginity, and I'm really not about the deceit, but I go to try to tell him nothing to forgive, and he says, no, I swear I will respect you forever, and I will not try anything again until our wedding night. So, he's true to his word, unlike me, and he gives me this chaste kiss on the forehead, and we both sneak back to our respective hammocks. The next night at dinner, right before, the parents say, we have a surprise for you, and they walk us a few streets downtown, and they show us this house that is being built, and the father says, this is our property too, and we are having a house built for you as a wedding gift. And the mother says, yes, and you see all the rooms, so you can have plenty of children. My knees turn liquid. I see spots in my eyes, and I have to sit down in the street. And as they're crouching over me, seeing if I'm okay, all I can think of is, in this parallel universe, everything is figured out. I have a career as a fertility goddess and silver shop worker. I'm about to have a husband, and then I'll be pumping out kids and probably a lot to keep up my rep as a fertility goddess. And what's worse is they'll be delivered by a vet as opposed to a doctor, and it'll probably be about the benefit of drugs unless I can talk him into some horse tranquilizers or something. You know, if I go back to my universe, nothing's figured out, but maybe that's not so bad. And if any of you have ever been at a party with somebody who suddenly decides they're not having a good time and they do one of these, oh wow, look at the time, gotta run. Well, that's how I got out of Mexico. I basically said, oh, look at that visa expiration date. Sorry, gotta run. But I'll be back in a jiff once it's cleared up. And it was BS, because at the time, any American, as long as you want to stay in Mexico, you can stay in Mexico, especially if you're bringing those gringo dollars. It may be different now, but then it didn't matter, so it was bullshit. I hope they didn't know it, but and then I left really abruptly. It was actually 2 days after the sex, 1 day after the new home. And I had the entire family at the bus stop to see me off, and half the village, really. And everyone was saying their goodbyes, and Itacho was the last goodbye. And when he hugged me, he whispered, you're not coming back, are you? And I couldn't lie. I said, no, I'm sorry. And then I said for the first time, I love you, but if I stayed in this world, it would be just for you, and I've got to go back to my own world. But maybe you'll come to Maryland? I said, no, I don't think I could leave my world behind either. And he pulled me in close, gave me a kiss, and let me go. And like a yo-yo with a string break, I went flying off and never looked back.
Folks, what does it feel like to get hit by a car while biking, to be attacked by an alligator, or learn your spouse has hired someone to kill you? If those are the kinds of stories you find interesting, and of course you do, then What Was That Like is the podcast for you. What Was That Like is filled with real stories about the most surreal experiences of people's lives. On each episode, a guest comes on and tells about the time they found themselves in some type of extreme situation. Could be an animal attack, a plane crash, winning the showcase on The Price is Right, and more. There's a story about a woman whose parachute failed, a woman who was shot 12 times in the Fifth Third building in Cincinnati, Ohio, where my best friend used to work. There's a woman whose house exploded. Listen, it's all told through the lens of the person who actually experienced it. So if you want to hear some unbelievable and inspiring firsthand stories, I invite you to check out What Was That Like? Every story's verified. So you know even the most bizarre tales are someone's reality. Listen to What Was That Like on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or on the app you're using now.
We're back.
A 21-year-old college dropout, back living with my parents in their basement and working in a shoe store. So I decided to join the Navy. And the boot camp was all one big drag, but one of the cool parts about it was just before lights out, or in Navy terms, bedtime, there was a mail call. And this was when you finally got the letters from your family and friends. And during this whole time, I started getting letters from Adrian. Now, Adrian and I had dated on and off for 3 years, and we realized we had a lot in common. We always had a great time together. I think one of the things I really liked about her was the simple fact that she was a complete opposite of me. She was very quiet, very polite, very intelligent. And it just seemed like every time we were together, we would have fun. But eventually things would start to deteriorate and erode and we would break up. But we'd eventually come back together, just seeing how silly things had gotten between us. But here she was now writing me every day. And through these letters, we were really getting to know each other again. It almost seemed like putting pen to paper helped us rediscover one another on different levels and aspects. No matter how crazy or weird just the whole Navy life was becoming, she was always sort of like a safe harbor that could always be returned to. So I'd finally graduated from boot camp and was ordered to Florida for 1 year of schooling. And while I was down there, what started off as phone calls between the two of us turned into visits. She would fly down on a Friday. We would go out. We'd party on the beach. We'd have a blast. We'd rent jet skis, fun in the sun. And on Sunday, I would take her back to the airport. She'd fly off. And this was easily the most perfect relationship I'd ever been in. I went back home on leave for a quick little Christmas vacation break, and while I was there on New Year's Eve, I proposed to her, in which she gladly said yes. But in this time, I'd gotten orders. I had to go to Seoul, South Korea, for 1 year. So the plan was, while I was overseas, I would send back money to put towards a joint wedding fund. She would stay back home, and she would completely plan the wedding, with help from her mother, for 1 year. My time in Korea came to an end. I was going to fly home, get married, and enjoy 30 days of much-needed vacation time. So, flew in, got into the airport, stepped off the plane, and as soon as I finally saw her, I could tell from her body stance that something was wrong. She was irritated. This was not somebody that was looking forward to seeing somebody else coming off a plane after a one-year absence. This was irritation at its finest. This was 4 days before the wedding that I was arriving, so I had kind of thought to myself that maybe this was the stressful point. Here she was, having spent a year doing all the work towards it, and here I was showing up at the last second. But it just didn't seem that she even wanted to take the time to explain to me what was going on. And I would ask her, is there anything I can do? Is there anything I can help with? And they were quick, no. I've got it. Don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. I woke up on my wedding day and every nerve in my body was firing, telling me not to go. We were riding in the limo to the wedding and the guys in my wedding party are all having a good time. They're already drinking. They don't care. And I'm just quietly thinking to myself, what is going on? things are not meshing together. This doesn't feel good. And every time I'd turn to a friend and say, does this, you know, things seem really weird, things seem off, and he was just, oh, don't worry about it. You just, you know, you're getting nervous. Everything's going to be fine by the end. And, you know, when your buddies tell you everything's going to be fine, of course, you just go right along with it. This was definitely the big church Catholic wedding. All right, there was family and friends from all over the country. As soon as I stepped out of the limo, we were quickly moved off to a separate room in the church so that, you know, we wouldn't break the tradition of the bride and groom seeing each other before the wedding started. Me and my guy bridal party, we're all standing there off to the side. We quietly walk in from the side and just standing there, and the hair on the back of my neck stood up. Everybody stood up because here comes the bride. And I'm thinking, here comes somebody that I don't think I've ever met before. And we exchanged vows, very hollow vows. And when it came time for the first kiss, I've had strangers give warmer handshakes. Then it was off to the wedding reception, a time for everybody to have fun. I mean, this was the part where everybody was involved. We had the family and the friends, the parents, bosses, people I'd never met before, but I was somehow related to, were at this wedding reception. But nobody noticing that the bride and the groom are standing on two completely different sides of the reception hall. I would try to walk over and say hi and maybe steal a kiss from the cheek, and I was almost pushed away. The only time you were going to see a bride and groom standing next to each other was on top of the cake. The second day of our marriage, I woke up and she said, well, you're going to have to find something to do today. I said, what? She says, yeah, I already have plans. I'm going out with my friends. I'm sure you have something else you can do. So I'll just catch up with you later. On the third day, I'd finally had enough. This just wasn't right. So we were sitting there at her parents' house having dinner, and she had reached past me once again as though I wasn't even sitting there. I pulled myself back, being made to feel like I was invading her personal space. And I said, that's enough. That is enough. We have to talk right now, please. And we went for a nice walk out in her parents' backyard. And I said to her, what is going on? What is the problem here? The way you're treating me is not right. And she stopped and thought to herself for a moment. And she looked back at me and in almost an embarrassed whisper said, I don't know, but I need time alone to think about it. We decided it would be best for us to split apart for 24 hours so that we could each get our heads straight and determine exactly what we wanted our next move to be. But 24 hours later, we finally met up on neutral turf in a state park, and we sat on one of those long aluminum benches that swing and it overlooked onto a big hill. And finally, she turned and looked at me. And again, very softly, she said, I'm not ready for this. I don't want to be married. I remember she kept speaking. She was probably making a good case. I could see her lips moving, but all I kept thinking to myself was, how on earth did this happen? How am I going to get out of it? By the time I finally snapped to and realized that she was still talking, she had ended with an even quieter, I'm sorry, this just has to end right now. Now it's been 3 days since our lovely wedding. 3 days we'd been together, and it's officially over. Time is of the essence here for me, because I'm home on leave. I've only got 23, 24 more days. I don't have the time or the money to be going from New York State to South Carolina to be going through a divorce. Luckily, my dad knew a lawyer who knew a guy who knew another lawyer on his bowling team that would be able to take care of this divorce pretty quick and cheap. In fact, he said he would do it for the remaining money we had left in our joint wedding account. So the lawyer agreed to get everything started. And during this time, we still had the wedding gifts. I could care less what would happen with the gifts that were received from her side of the family or friends. What I knew was if you were at our wedding on my behalf or sitting on my side of the church, you were going to get your gift back. And not only that, you were going to get a handwritten thank you note for coming and a face-to-face explanation of exactly what was going on. And as people were getting their thank you notes back and opening and they'd see, the natural reaction was, oh my God, what's happening here? I would say, it's over. And they'd ask why. I'd say, I don't know. It's over. And sometimes people's confusion would almost turn into doubt or even judgment of what did you do to specifically make this be over so quickly? And again, all I could say was, I don't know. In between my times of returning gifts, I still had to check in with our lawyer. So as I'm going there, he's showing me how this divorce is laid out. And in New York State, there is no such thing as irreconcilable differences. In fact, the catch-all at the very end at this time was cruel and inhumane treatment. So there I was divorcing Adrian on the grounds of cruel and inhumane treatment. Adrian and I got together and we met in the lawyer's office. The lawyer had us both sit down. He handed us each our own copy, fresh off the printer, and handed us each a blue ballpoint pen and said, take your time and read through it thoroughly. If you have any questions, circle it, highlight it, make notes, and we will gladly go through it and give an answer. So I made sure I sat down and really started reading it. And as I'd finish a page, I would turn it, and I realized that Adrian had turned hers at the same time. Same thing, I read through page two, turn it, her page turns. Third page, I go through it quickly, turn the page, she did too, and I realized she wasn't reading through this. She was not paying attention to what was going on. She just wanted to sign it and get on with her life. But that was it. It was done. I got my things together and moved on to my next duty station in Charleston, South Carolina. And a few weeks had passed after that. One day, I look in the mailbox and I see a large manila envelope, and it was the finalized court-approved divorce. And a few days after that, I'd gotten a phone call on my new cell phone. And I grab it and I press talk, and there was Adrian on the other end. I didn't even know how she'd gotten my number. But she said, what is going on with all of this? My mom was just reading through my copy of the divorce agreement, and it says here that you divorced me for cruel and inhumane treatment, and I think this is a load of BS. And actually, I'm considering getting my own lawyer, and probably, I pulled that phone away from my ear, and I hung up. And I realized that I would never speak to her again. The fact that she wouldn't open up, the fact that I basically was left on my own to figure everything out, kind of left me scarred for a while. But luckily, I made some new friendships. And one night, I met a fantastic woman whom I've now been married to for over 10 years. But my wife now, I think what I've learned the most out of all this is if something does feel wrong, if something does feel slightly off, I will immediately confront her. I'll say, is everything cool? Is everything okay? Is there anything you want to tell me? Sometimes she'll just say, no, I'm just mad at you because you're you. or she'll say, everything's fine. I'm not going to disappear 3 days from now. I'm here for the long haul. And sure, there'll be times when I do start to make a dumb decision, and she'll be standing there over my shoulder saying, are you sure once you get to the end of it, if 3 days from now, that's exactly what you'd want to live with for the rest of your life? Usually she's right.
This is John Mayer behind me now, a song called Love on the Weekend, to follow a story called Weekenders by Mark Schlehetka, because some kind of love doesn't last much longer than that. Well, that's all for the Best of Love Stories number 2. And if you've got a story about love thwarted or love conquering all, pitch it to us. Maybe you can be on the next episode of this series. Everything you need to know about how to pitch us your story is at risk-show.com/submissions. Folks, today's the day. Take a risk. And I'll be dreaming.